Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, how many online programs does CSP usually have every week? The Orange County Jewish Community Scholar Program was founded in 2001 as a community-wide endeavor committed to adult Jewish education and family Jewish celebrations. While their activities were originally in person, this past year CSP has adapted to the pandemic by offering many programs online. The programs are very varied and designed to appeal to a wide audience. Ari Katz is founder and chair of the CSP, where he's worked to bring over 125 of the greatest Jewish thinkers, artists, writers, and entertainers in the world to Orange County, California. He was also founder and leader of the Wandering Minyan, an egalitarian participatory service in the Newport Irvine area, affiliated with Congregation B'nai Israel of Tustin, California. Katz holds a B.A. in Economics from Princeton University and J.D. cum laude from Georgetown University Law Center. This week he's speaking with us about the CSP and its many activities, which we hope you'll check out by clicking on the link on this page.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Ari. Before we talk about CSP, could you tell us a little bit about your own background, where you're from, your Jewish background, studies, profession, that sort of stuff?
Sure. I was actually born in South Africa. My family is 100% Lithuanian and made it to South Africa. I believe the earliest was like 1918 or so.
There are a lot of Lithuanian Jews in South Africa.
Yeah, I think most South African Jews are Lithuanian. I'm told there are some who are German as well, and I've met one or two, but most I know are definitely 100% Lithuanian. So I grew up for about 6 or 7 years in Johannesburg. My family, I'm actually third generation South African, which is unusual. One of my grandmothers was born in South Africa as well. Both of my parents were born there, and I'm the oldest of four brothers. We were all born in South Africa. 1973, my father, who is a doctor, decided, and my parents decided it was time to leave South Africa. It was not a great place to be for many reasons. And they joined the exodus, I guess, in the 70s. We ended up in Boston, Massachusetts, where my dad was set to do some training at Children's Hospital in pediatric gastroenterology. And we were actually on our way to Israel. My parents had purchased a house in, I believe it was Ra'anana. And my dad promised my mom, don't worry, we'll just be in Boston for a few years. We can deal with the weather. And then we're going to be in Israel. And they never left Boston. So I grew up my whole young life up to college in the Boston area in Brookline and Newton. I attended Maimonides Jewish Day School, which is an Orthodox Jewish day school in Brookline, and lived in Brookline and Newton. Very nice Jewish enclaves in the Boston area, till I went to law school, where I went to, undergrad at Princeton University in New Jersey. And then I took a year off, was a Horace Goldsmith Fellow at Hebrew University in between undergrad and law school, went back to the States and went to Georgetown University Law School, Law Center actually, and obtained a JD. And ended up here in Southern California after a few years working in Boston.
How did you end up in California?
I followed a woman. Oh. We were engaged and we got married, and we took a year off for a honeymoon around the world, and figured when we came back, we'd spend time out here with her family in Southern California, and never left. So I've been here in Southern California for about 24 years now.
Okay, let's talk about CSP, the organization itself. What gave you the idea to found it and when?
Well, we are celebrating our 21st year. So I guess about 21 years ago. Remember, I had moved to California 23 years ago, and I really enjoyed, we're in an area we're in an area called Orange County. So if you know Irvine, Tustin, Newport Beach, that's the area we're in. And what I found was two things. It's really a spectacularly beautiful place to live. There's incredible beaches here. The weather is beautiful. Other than, you know, fires and earthquakes, we're generally pretty happy out here. And now drought, but, you know, no snow and no freezing cold unless you go up the mountains. So it's a beautiful place to live. However, Jewishly, I found it to be very lacking. It's representative of a typical undersized Jewish community in the United States of America. We have a very nice infrastructure and we've got many synagogues now, but we're not Los Angeles or Boston or LA Philadelphia, New York. We don't have incredible Jewish speakers. We didn't have incredible Jewish speakers coming through. And I guess I was spoiled growing up in Boston and living on the East Coast where I could always hear an interesting speaker and always have someone to learn with. We have great rabbis who are very skilled in life cycle events, but they're not PhDs in general, and that's not what their main job is to do. So after 2 years, I went to some friends and I said, I heard about this concept of maybe bringing a scholar into a community for a month. And I said, well, if we put up money and you guys match the money, we'll create a pot of money and we'll go out and try to bring a scholar here for a month. And we'll call ourselves a community scholar program after this 1 month scholar idea. And I got a small group of people who liked the idea. I approached the Jewish Federation in Orange County and they liked the idea and they were willing to give us a little bit of funding as well. And that's how we started CSP with our first 1 month scholar. It was Avigdor Shinan. And he flew in from Israel and spent 1 month in our community teaching. And from that day on, we've been growing CSP because, you know, what do you do for the other 11 months out of the year? So we decided, well, we should bring in people to do lunch programs, evening programs, weekend programs, retreats, adult retreats, family retreats, camping programs. So we've organically grown from the concept of a one-month scholar, which we still do. We're heading into our 21st annual one-month scholar this coming year, to a wide variety of programs.
Let's talk about the programs later, because I would like to ask you more about the scholars. So they're there for a month, and what do they do exactly, and who is the audience?
So the one-month scholar program we do once a year, because it's an intense program. I should backtrack and say that all of our programs were the Orange County Community Scholar Program, OCCSP. And historically, our programs have really been for people in Orange County, California, and they've been live programs. So they're really built around bringing a scholar to our community. This 1 month scholar spends the whole month in our community, and usually it's either the whole month of January, whole month of February, or half January, half February. It depends on the scholar's schedule. We give them a place to live and a car and an honorarium, and then we set up programs for them around the community. Our CSP doesn't have any employees and we don't have a building or a particular site that we do programs. Our goal is to bring these scholars and share them throughout the community so that we get as many people as possible participating locally. So the scholar will come in and do, you know, an opening night event at the Jewish Community Center, and then a three-part lunch series at another location. And then every night of the week, except for Mondays, or every day, they'll be speaking at different synagogues or different institutions that are part of our consortium, people who support the Community Scholar Program. And what we found is that each scholar kind of grows a bunch of what we call groupies, scholar groupies, and these people follow the scholar from place to place. So it's really cool to see people who belong to conservative synagogues go to Reform temples and vice versa, and to Orthodox synagogues. And so over the years, we have this great community of learners across the community. Generally people, I would say baby boomers, but every program has its own audience. If you do it at a synagogue, you'll get that synagogue's audience and the people who are following the scholar from other places in the community. So it's really been a great model of learning and sharing and building a community of learners for Orange County, California.
So does each scholar then have his or her own specialty and the whole month is built around that?
Correct. So, you know, for example, in 2020, Paul Lipps, we flew Professor Paul Lipps in from Israel, and the whole month theme was fulfilling the dream, the fascinating story of modern Israel. And he gave like 28 lectures, just incredibly different variety of lectures about Israel, the politicians who are part of Israeli history, the peoples who make up the community in Israel. So that's one example. Try and look for another example. Mark Michael Epstein, he's a professor from Vassar College. He was with us in 2013 for the month. He was our 12th annual one-month scholar. His theme for the month was People of the Image, Jewish Identities, Politics, and Theology via the Arts. So there's an example of two completely different topics. And the goal is to bring really good teachers in who can give 20 or more different presentations on their specialty.
How many people attended it first for the first programs that you had 21 years ago?
Oh, you're asking me to remember numbers from 21.
No, my real question is, at the very beginning, who participated in this? Who attended? Did you contact people and make the program known through the different Jewish organizations and synagogues?
So, the very first year, obviously the families that helped to fund the program were committed to the program and they attended. And we had like a small class series during the 1 month residency and they would come to classes. But we discussed the programs with all the synagogues in Orange County and almost all of them agreed to be hosts. So if a particular synagogue hosted one event, that membership from that synagogue would come to the event, plus our donors, plus people who had heard about the program and were interested. So I don't really understand exactly the question. I guess what I can say, though, is that every year the program has grown with respect to people knowing about us, looking forward to us, and coming to programs. So if we have an opening program that's open to community, we've been getting 200 people or more, depending on the program, the time of the day, and so on, to attend the opening. And then it builds up, and we have a closing event. Even more people come to the closing event. And in between, it really depends on the program. Is it a small class event, in which case we have 50 people in the class? Is it a Friday night program at one of the major synagogues, in which 380 people come to the program? So, over the 1 month scholar stay in our community, our best estimate is that we reach at least 2,000 different people over the month. But we also have this core group, and it can be 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 who come to multiple programs. Some, we always keep track and we have a little game at the end and we give up prizes. Who's attended the most programs? We've had years where the scholar has spoken 25 times and the people have attended 23 of the programs. Sometimes it's a repeat, so they don't go. So what's really cool to see is the growth of this concept in our community, the commitment, the various synagogues to the program, and the friendships that have been formed by people who would never have met each other if not for coming together to learn with our scholars over the 1 month. Remember, we don't just do the 1 month. So, things have changed recently. I'm sure we'll get to how we've pivoted and what that has meant for CSP. But we have at least one or two programs a month, and then we have an adult retreat for our high-level donors. And so people have really formed friendships across denominational barriers that would probably keep them apart in the past. And we have this community committed to adult Jewish education.
I saw an Eli talk that you gave, I think, in 2015.
In which you said that you had started some unique and very imaginative programs to appeal to families and especially younger people. Can you tell us about some of these?
Yes. We started a dad's and kids camping trip. And I wanted to do I was not a camper when I grew up, but I live in Southern California. And if you drive 6 hours in almost any direction or get on a boat and go into the Pacific, you can get to some amazing campsites. And I thought it'd be cool. I had some young daughters at the time. Now they're older and I wanted to have adventures with them. So I got together with some dads and I said, do you want to do this camping adventure? They said, yes. So we started camping and we did over 23 camping adventures every October to everywhere within, as I said, the dads and kids, probably 3 to 4 hours, including the Channel Islands. And then families, their moms heard and they said they wanted to come camping. So we started a summer camping trip. So we've done about 20 summer camping adventures. Those go even further afield, like we've been to the Grand Canyon and other great national parks, as well as incredible locations that are, in the forests and near us. So those two were very oriented to families and dads with young kids. What I noticed was that people my age back then, when I was younger, 20 years ago, people my age wouldn't come to adult ed. They still don't. I think people with young kids are just very busy. They're very tired and it's hard for them to get out. But if you do family programming for them, they will come. So we did the family, two family camping trips a year. And then we started a family retreat every May, Memorial Day weekend. And we would get together at a variety of hotels and then up at Brandeis Bardeen for many years and bring in great teachers and counselors for the kids and give people an experience of Shabbat and learning that they really did not have throughout the year, particularly in our community, Orange County. So that has been a very meaningful experience for me, my family, and many of my friends and their kids who've grown up through CSP and those retreats. We've also had something called Shabbat Alive, which we do once a summer, where we bring in an interesting musician and we go out and people bring picnics and the whole community gets together. That grew to about 1,000 people. It grew so big, we just couldn't handle it. We don't have any employees, and we didn't back then. We were certainly limited in funds, so we had to make it a little smaller. So we limited to our members only now. And so when we do it, we get about 200 people together for a Friday night family experience. And over the years, we've done things like a family surfing camp. We've done sandcastle building. We've brought in a family, like a parent educator to do programs for family education. So that's not our major focus for programs, but since I do have children, it was something that was very important to me. And it was a way to connect with the younger families and the younger and create new members for CSP over the years.
When did you start to have programs online? Was that only with the pandemic?
Correct. We had no programs online, zero. I didn't even know. I knew what Zoom was because my wife was taking classes over Zoom, and I always thought it was a strange thing to do. But in March 2020, we were officially shut down. There was no way we were going to have live programming. We couldn't risk the health of our baby boomers. So this was even before there was an official shutdown. And I guess we had a choice of either having no programs or going online. So we gave Zoom a chance, and our first program had 50 people, then did another one, 60, 70. And all of a sudden it exploded. And since that time, we averaged 3 to 4 programs a week. We've done, as of today, we've done over 260 programs online since we started in March 2020. We've been able to do programs with incredible scholars all around the world. And our audience now has dramatically changed. We still have a very strong core from Orange County and Southern California. That's our base. But we now have many people coming from places like New York and Boston, Seattle, Texas, Same. Florida, a lot of Canadians and people from all around the world. I think the last time I checked, we now have people coming from 38 states and 12 countries. So our membership base has doubled. Our participation per program has tripled. And we are no longer a small parochial Orange County educational nonprofit. We are now serving a much larger community, and it's been amazing.
And the programs are extremely varied. There's something for everyone.
Well, that has always been my goal. It's just I can do more of it. We can do more of it given that we're doing more programs. So it's always been a goal to bring in a variety of speakers from different perspectives and different topics. We don't focus on just one thing. The richness of Judaism is the incredible variety of topics that we have something to say about. And of course, our history is world history. So whereas before, we'd have one program a month, and I tried to vary it so each month there may be an archaeology program one month, next month maybe history, the next month maybe something in the arts, maybe we'd do something Jewish cooking. We'd obviously include Jewish text study, very focused on Jewish philosophy, Jewish theology, Kabbalah, and all that. Now we can do that all in one month. And so, yes, I would challenge any other educational institution right now to see who has the most variety, you know, the biggest variety of programs in a month. I think that we are definitely bringing in incredible variety, and I think people enjoy that.
Aside from all the different places that people listen in from, do you know anything else about your audience? Do you know anything about their Jewish affiliation or Jewish connection or ages or professions or anything else?
No, I try not to get too intrusive into people's personal data. I know, you know, I know what they give me if they volunteer it. So that's why I know we're still primarily baby boomers. I would say our audience is 60 years old plus. Depends on the program we run. Some programs will attract maybe a broader audience. I know that we probably have more women than men who participate. It's a factor of the mere fact that we do have programs during the day and, you know, who's working, who's not working. I think I do get emails from people around the world who appreciate what we do, and certainly people in the United States. I can tell you one thing. These are people who are committed to learning, which is amazing. My fear is, are people in the younger generation, the ones I said who don't come to these, are they not committed to learning yet? Will they ever be committed to learning? I don't know. But this group that comes are people who are committed. They have this love for learning. They come back. I mean, I do ask people, how many programs have you attended? And quite a few of them have attended all, you know, more than 200 of our programs. And I would say over 50% have attended more than 50 programs in the last 12 months. So they're very committed. And not only that, I can see the questions they ask and how they participate. And it's an educated crowd. I mean, they're not PhDs. They don't have master's degrees in Jewish education. They're just Jewishly interested, and they're willing to share, and they have great insights. And I would say our speakers generally are very impressed with what the audience has to say and the questions that they ask. So that's what I can tell you about our audience.
When did you begin to have partner organizations, and can you tell us something about them?
We've always had partner organizations in Orange County, California, because of our one-month scholar program. So we didn't call them like an official partner, but they were invited to participate in our one-month scholar program. They would commit a small amount of money, and they would get a date to host a scholar. When we went online, I spoke to a good friend of mine. His name is Peter Mesnick, and he's at a synagogue in Needham, Massachusetts. I think it's Temple Beth Shalom. And he chairs the adult, or he chaired the adult education program there. And he said, it's very hard to do online programming. Can we tie in with you? And I said, it's a great idea. So we tried this test project where his synagogue, I think, was the first outside of Orange County to be our partner. And he started to get a lot of positive reviews from people in his synagogue who said, these programs are great. Thank you for partnering with CSP. So it gave me the idea to start contacting other synagogues, inviting them to partner. Synagogues have a very hard time, particularly during COVID, in doing high-end adult ed, because they really are focused on life cycle events and services, Friday night, Shabbat, holidays. So my thought was, if they partner with us and share our programs as their programs, or as they're partnering on the programs, we all benefit because we can grow our community of learners. And that has happened. We are partners with Town and Village Synagogue in New York, for example. And now we have lots of New York people who come regularly. They are very committed and they are great learners. We have another synagogue called Beth Shalom up in Seattle, and they come and they learn with us. We have synagogues in the Valley. We just added a few synagogues in Boston, Walnut Street Shul in Chelsea, Massachusetts, and Temple Emmanuel in Newton. We just added the Brotherhood Synagogue in New York City. So we're kind of growing in adding synagogues to our partner list. And when they advertise and share our programs, then more people come. And then if they like the programs, those people share it with their friends. So it's really contributed to our growth.
Are all the partner synagogues then, or any of them other kinds of organizations?
They're mostly synagogues, but it doesn't have to be a synagogue. We have Heritage Point, which is a retirement community in Orange County. They are partners with us. And I'm trying to think if there's another kind of institution. You know, I mean, we're very happy to partner with Jewish community centers. Anybody who wants to add a strong adult ed component within the Jewish world, we're very happy to partner with.
Are you thinking about the future? Do you have any specific plans for the future, especially post-pandemic?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we are never going back to the old model, which was only live programs in Orange County, for two reasons. First of all, we now have donor supporters and people who learn with us from around the country and around the world. And if we only did local programs, we would lose that audience and they would lose the opportunity. So I don't want that to happen. And the second is that it's just much more economically feasible to bring speakers in online, and it gives us much more creativity in who we can bring in, when we can bring them, if we use online, as opposed to only being able to fly people in to Orange County to host them. So the success of this experiment, or this forced experiment of Zoom, has really led to a major shift. We will definitely have some live programs because we're built on live programs, and I want our community locally to be able to get together when it's safe to get together. But when we do that, we're hoping to record, if not live stream, those programs, and then we'll continue. As long as people want to donate and support CSP and they value the kind of online programs that we're doing, then we're going to do online programs forever.
I think that that is really, I call it the silver lining of the pandemic, because it's made so many wonderful programs available to people who otherwise wouldn't have the opportunity. And nobody would ever have the opportunity of attending live programs all over the world the way we can now.
Yeah, I mean, CSP is not the only organization that has figured this out. I've spoken to many other Jewish learning nonprofits, and the ones that have gone online have said the same thing, that their audience has grown. You know, they tend to have their own in-house educators. So I don't know about, they allow people to benefit from the economic opportunities of not having to pay to fly in their teacher to their community. So it's lowered the barrier to entry for them, and it's brought in bigger audiences. So I think it's incredible. It's not just learning, by the way. If you're interested in visiting synagogues around the world and having those kind of experiences, now you get to join places all over the world and see how they're davening. You can hear their rabbis speak. You can be part of online communities that either weren't available before the pandemic or people didn't know about, even if they were available. So it's been a radical shift in the Jewish world, as I assume it outside the Jewish world as well, for people who are interested in you know, visiting, learning, participating in online communities.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that we might have left out?
Yeah, one thing that we started to do before the pandemic was travel adventures. So we organized 3 5-day adventures in New York City over 3 years. Each adventure was different. We organized 2 trips to Israel. We actually had a third that was supposed to happen this past October. Obviously, we couldn't go. And we went to Lithuania and Poland in the summer of 2019. So we kind of opened this new avenue for learning, which was to go on travel adventures. What the pandemic made us do is to do virtual travel adventures. And that has been amazing. And we're very happy. We received a grant from the Topal family in New York to do a travel series coming up in the next year. And we're going to choose like really unique locations around the world that you may never go to or may have always wondered about. And we're going to go on travel adventures there. So I kind of feel like it's another new avenue that's open to us, this online travel adventure world. I'm hoping to get back to real travel adventures, but so we could take a lot more people in our bus online than we can take in person. Plus, you know, the cost to travel virtually is way cheaper than trying to buy an airplane ticket. So I think that's kind of a cool thing that we'll be doing much more over the next year.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And keep up your good work.
That's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.